During today's episode, myself and Robert discuss a Facebook post under the hashtag 22 a day. These posts shed a vivid picture on suicide and how hurting people take their own lives because they don't know any other way out. We are asking all who either deal with suicidal thoughts or know someone dealing with this mental illness to seek help. Suicide is not the answer to a temporary problem. To all the caregivers listening, and being the action is our only plea.
The Ear, Evangelical and Reformed Christian Podcast. Welcome to The Ear, the Evangelical and Reformed, a Christian podcast that urges you to think deeper and draws you closer to God through faith. Through powerful sermons, teaching segments, and discussions, The Ear hopes to give you a different perspective on secular topics from a Christian worldview. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Please welcome your host, Brandon Queen.
Good morning, podcast world, and welcome to yet another episode of The Ear. We are trekking along with season 3, Suicide and Hope. And today we're going to take a different approach with a Facebook post that myself and my roommate Robert came across. And we're going to read it and dissect each segment for you, just to kind of give you an idea of what the message stated. So without further ado, how you doing, Robert?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Brandon?
I is good. You want to go ahead and give us the background to this story?
Sure. I came across it the other day. As being a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, they always have the suicide awareness of 22 a day. You might have seen on TV, advertised on the internet. It's basically advising people that 22 veterans commit suicide every day due to depression, PTSD, not able to fit and cope with, you know, normal life. So I ran across this, and it's hashtag 22 a day, and it's about a gentleman named Nicholas. I'm going to probably mess the middle name up. Joachim Lazar. He was born March 22nd, 1997. His end of life was August 14th, 2019. He was only 22 years old.
Wow. Wow. Well, his girlfriend, I'm assuming that's his girlfriend, right?
That wrote this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his girlfriend wrote, I'm guessing from the day she started to notice a change in Nicholas's life, from October 3rd to 2018, all the way to basically October 1st, 2019. So we're going to read each segment and kind of dissect it. And we're going to show you that she basically did everything she could as far as, you know, trying to prevent Nicholas from committing suicide. So on October 3rd, 2018, we met. We started talking, and at first, it was nothing but friendly. We were learning all about each other, the things we liked. We learned about our past and all the things we've been through. I knew then that you've had a really hard last few years. So reading that, what do you think she meant?
What I'm guessing is possibly his service in the military, his last few years, probably his deployments, what he experienced, what he saw, what he has to live with, all veterans, especially people like me who's been overseas. It's something we have to live with the rest of our lives. It's not going to go away.
Gotcha. And then she goes on and does another diary entry, if you will, for November 8th, 2018. Can you read that for me?
Yeah. We started dating, going out on dates, spending time with each other, planning out what we wanted to do with our lives together. You moved back to Georgia soon after. We FaceTimed every day. We talked about me and the kids moving down and all of us just being a family.
You know, and after reading that, it seems like the girlfriend was trying to plan a life and basically bring meaning and stability to Nicholas's life. You know, and often, given the fact that I know you and what you've been through, a lot of people that go to the military need some sort of stability,
mm-hmm.
All right? Or for lack of better words, anybody dealing with any suicidal thoughts actually need some type of stability to kind of help them cope and get through the day.
Obviously, medicine can help with that, but family is what brings everybody closer together.
I agree.
Okay. All right. Now, January 1st, 2019.
You were coming home from your New Year's party. You told me you hadn't been drinking. Your truck hydroplaned off the road and you hit a tree. You were so upset. You didn't know what you were going to do. Months later, you told me that you drove off the road and you tried to hit a tree, but the ground was wet and pulled the truck and you struck the tree in a different way than you wanted. You had lived when you didn't want to.
Now, after reading that, we did an episode on recognizing the signs. She recognized the sign as soon as he told her that. Okay. What do you think else she could have possibly done in that time frame?
No, the only thing I could think she could have done at that time frame is, I guess, talk to him, be there for him, say, hey, whatever your problem is, please open up to me. You know, if you have going through harsh times, what's your mind thinking? Explain it. I know I'm not going to be, you know, 100% in your mind and know what you're thinking, but help me to help you. That's the only thing I could say best on that one.
Yeah. And one thing I want to add is whenever we're dealing with a suicidal person with that kind of mental capacity, if you will. And I'm not saying this guy was mentally incapable of doing things, but his mental status was altered by what, you know, his time in the military. So one thing I am going to recommend that we do is figure out what is your state's laws on persons that are thinking about committing suicide. Because here in Louisiana, if that comment is made, they have the right to go to the coroner's office and actually get what we call an order of protective custody. And then that would, you know, force the person with the thoughts to go and get evaluated by medical personnel and then possibly seek
psychological, sir.
Thank you. psychological help to help them cope through and get through their issues, or I guess get medicated, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to January 13th, 2019.
You want me to go?
Yes.
We split up. We lived 1,000 miles apart. We lived two different lives. You needed time to heal your mind, and you weren't mentally capable of maintaining a relationship while you were trying to build yourself up.
Don't mind the pager. But here, I think... Now, I'm not clear if she initiated the split up or was it him?
That's a thing. It doesn't specify in this journal entry. It just says we split up. We lived 1,000 miles apart. I'm thinking that he probably did say, you know, I can't do this. I can't. I'm not the one for you. You got to remember I'm having these problems. It's just not going to work. I'm guessing that's might have what could have happened. Again, the journal entry isn't specific of what exactly went on, just that they split up.
Yeah. And she probably could have went back home. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's from Georgia. She moved there to be with him, so she probably went home.
Yeah, I believe she lives in New York.
Okay, well, that's probably more than 1,000 miles. But anyway, that's not the point. So she probably initiated it to kind of give him space, you know, and you're probably right. He probably did say, I don't think I can do this, you know. And that right there is a sure sign that he is telling her, or he's trying to make it as worse as possible of a breakup to where if he did commit suicide, it wasn't on her. That's probably what he was getting at.
Probably.
Okay. Now, March, she skipped a few months and she jumped to March 28th, 2019.
Let me go again?
Yep.
I'll just finish the rest. Yes. About that. You called me. We FaceTimed for 3 hours because you weren't doing okay. You were sitting in your car with the garage door closed. Your car was on. I made you open the garage door and turn off your car. I talked to you until you felt okay again. That night you promised you would get the help you needed, and we got back together.
Okay, so obviously she felt the need to be there for him. Mm-hmm. And that is what I would call a servant heart. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody that sees the needs of others and is willing to run to that and help that person, no matter what the cost is. And I'm going to commend her for doing that, because I think at that moment in his life, he was probably at his lowest. Mm-hmm. All right, or... Getting basically there. At the tipping point, if you will.
And I commend her too to the fact that I'm not saying a lot, but there are people out there that if this would have happened to their relationship and they heard their loved one was in a car with it running with the garage closed, they'd leave. They'd be like, this guy's crazy. I can't be with him or her.
Right. And she, you know, she took the bull by the horns, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, and kudos to her.
I agree.
And then we jump over to April 20th, 2019.
I came to see you. We drank wine and made cookies. We got wine drunk in your kitchen. We talked for hours about how you weren't okay. We talked about how in every relationship there's a gardener and a flower, and you needed to be the flower for a while. We held each other close. I realized that day that no matter what issues we could have, had you were the one.
So again, she is owning this relationship, you know. Mm-hmm. She knows this dude is mentally messed up. Mm-hmm. But she is willing to walk that walk with him. And I remember saying this in several of my previous episodes with Barbara Roberts that, you know, especially from a Christian standpoint, we're called to walk with people in their time of need. Mm-hmm. All right? We're not called to run away from them. Mm-hmm. And even though later back on a couple of her journal entries, she did move away 1,000 miles. But she was still, in a sense, there, just not there in person.
She was there spiritually.
Right, right. So given the fact that she owned her relationship and was like, you know, this is mine. No matter what the problems are, I'm going to be here.
And we'll stick through it together.
And, you know, and honestly, folks, that sounds like marriage material. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of relationship you want in a marriage. And I know she's only dating this guy, and she knows that he's messed up, and she knows what his problems are. She is willing and wanting to push through with this. And that is the number one thing we need to do. We recognize the sign, and then we kind of see and we listen and we hear. And then what's next? We act. And she's starting to do that as we move through the journal. All right, where are we at?
May 14th, 2019.
Go ahead.
You came to New York to spend a week with me for my birthday. You were there for Addie's diagnose. Can't talk tonight. You climbed most of the way up Blue Mountain with me. We got engaged, and then we went drinking on my birthday. You ended up telling me that you still weren't okay. You went home after that week and started work at your new job.
So he found something that could probably help him, but he still wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, I'm not going to criticize her, but I think at that point, I would have probably reached out to his family.
And I'll add something. In that entry, you can tell that they went to New York, or mm-hmm. he did, for her birthday, and they drank. I don't recommend drinking with anybody who has these problems, because alcohol will induce depression worse mm-hmm. or cause the instability of the suicidal thoughts to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. All right, June 14th, 2019.
I moved down to Georgia. It was an extremely exciting time. We found out I was pregnant. The excitement of being a parent was all you talked about. You helped me to be the parent I always wanted to be. You showed me a different side of me that I never knew was there. We spent every night in each other's arms. Everything seemed okay. I knew you still needed help. You gave me little cues all the time. You left the house a few times with your dad's ashes and a pistol. But I always talked you down and convinced you to come home to me. You never went when I asked you to. But I kept asking, kept reminding you how important it was.
All right. So that particular, like, that's the highlight of this whole particular episode, was that she kept reassuring him his worth. You know, despite you're depressed, despite you're going through this, despite, you know, you got your dad's pistol and ashes, you are worth something to, you know,
to me, the kid that's unborn.
Right. And even the kid that was born.
Mm-hmm. Because it's Abby, one from the last one. Yep.
It seems like she started Abby. Getting attached to him. Mm-hmm. You know, so she kept reminding him of what his worth was. All right. And a lot of times, that is all a person that is dealing with suicide needs to hear, mm-hmm. is what they're worth to another person.
And so, also, you've noticed, too, is that he also gave her little cues even throughout that time frame, too. She's still catching on his cues, keeping, you know, close track on him. And other people wouldn't caught that. They'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, this woman has the mark of being a psychiatrist, but, you know. All right, moving on. We are
August 13th, 2019, the day before his end of watch. We had a fight. It seemed like a big one at the time. You made me go take a shower to rinse off the negative energy. I took a bath instead. You wrote your letter. You came back in to check on me. Pull me from the tub. We cried. You helped me get dressed, and we laid in bed. You held me all night long. You cuddled me like you had every night. Things felt like they could work. I like to say something.
Go ahead.
What this seems to me, from what I've, again, experienced and had seen in previous suicides, especially when someone is about to commit it, usually they, some are, some aren't. But this one appears to me that he was showing his last love and affection toward her, giving her the most love he's ever had to her. You know, grabbed her out of the tub, cried, held her all night cuddling, showed that he loved her, knowing that the next day was going to be his last.
And then I'll add, because as we journey through hope, a suicide and hope, and we take a look at Barbara Roberts' book, the same type of incident happened with Kathy. But her letter she wrote actually stated how much she loved her family and how much she didn't want to do it, but she felt there was no other option. You know, so Nicholas here, I agree with you. I think he was showing, you know, no matter what happens next, just know that I love you.
And again, it's a sign she didn't think was going to be anything different. She just thought things were going to work.
Yeah.
All right. This next one is the end. August 14, 2019. This paragraph is very long. It's going to be a long one. I apologize if I do get a little teared up on this one. You woke up to your alarm. You got up and did your usual routine. You gave me a kiss and you walked out of the room. I tried to fall back asleep when I heard the car turn on. I immediately sat up and looked around the room. Your work clothes were still where I left them the night prior. Your boots were by the bathroom door. I ran downstairs and turned your car off. I took the keys, opened the garage door, and made you come inside. You blankly looked at the ground, tears silently falling from your face. I told you I loved you. I hugged you. I asked you if I should call for help. I was worried. You told me no. If I did, you'd kill the EMT and then yourself. Owen came downstairs and saw us crying. I made him hug you. He told you he loved you. You hugged him and didn't want to let go. I made you get up and help me get the kids ready to take Owen to school. You didn't want to. You wanted to be left alone, but I couldn't. I was scared of what you might do. I tried to hold your hand as we drove Owen to school, but you wouldn't. You wouldn't talk to me, wouldn't look at me. You walked Owen into school and told him you loved him. Came back to the car and continued to ignore me as I told you about what we had to do that day if he was going to be home. We had an appointment to find out what we were having. We got home, you held Addie and put her into the jumper, or in her jumper. You let the dogs out, played with Gunner as I tried telling you to go shower and rinse up all those bad feelings. You sat at the bottom of the stairs and I asked you if you wanted me to shower with you. You were still looking at the ground and shook your head no. I kissed your head, I rubbed your back. I told you I loved you as I ran my fingers through your hair. I took your truck keys from your pocket because I knew you had a pistol and didn't want you running while I wasn't paying attention and hurting yourself. I put them in the garage. I came back inside and heard our bedroom door shut. Relief came over my body. I thought you were just going to shower. I went to try and find my phone and I heard you. I heard your body hit the floor, hit the door. You were struggling. I ran upstairs and the door was locked. I tried to kick it in. I was begging you with all my might to unlock the door. I begged you to let me in. I ran downstairs and knocked on the neighbor's door. They didn't answer. I took Owen's tablet and begged all my friends on Snapchat to call 911. I ran back upstairs and kept kicking on the door, throwing my body into this damn door that seemed to be so damn strong. How do other people do this? I was out of breath. I was tired. I was terrified. 911 came. I escorted the police upstairs and watched them kick our door in the first try. I saw you hanging there in our closet doorway from a pull-up bar that you had. You were tall enough. All you had to do was just stand up. I didn't want to believe what I saw. Before I could even react, EMTs were rushing upstairs, firefighters, more police officers. I was being rushed outside. They asked me a million questions before telling me they did everything they could, but you were gone. You had my phone. You took it so I couldn't call for help. I couldn't call anyone. I was so badly wanted to talk to my mom. I watched everyone come in and out of our house. The police stayed. The EMTs tried so hard to get me to go to be seen. I sat for what felt like hours before they brought you downstairs. I gave you our last kiss. They put the flag over top of you and left with you. that was the last time I saw you.
Now, before we continue, I will say doing enough is never enough. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this girl did everything she possibly could, and she pretty much watched everything she possibly could and tried to do certain things to help. Mm-hmm. We are not certified clinicians. Basically, we're not certified psychologists. But there are other things she could have done. But reading this entire article, this entire journal, she did everything she knew how to do. And this brings me back to, you know, in my previous episodes, I always tell people, always do something, never do nothing. Mm-hmm. And she always did something. And I respect the living hell out of my military men and women mm-hmm. that served this country. I think it's a very honorable thing. It's something I wanted to do when I was younger, just never got around to it. And I think our veterans don't get the help they need at all. You know, and it's kind of hard reading Facebook posts like this, news articles like this. That's why I didn't read, because I knew I would be crying. But for the most part, this girl did everything she could. And I'm going to stop there. We're going to continue. We're going to finish up. And then we're going to talk about how we can get different ways we can get help for people that are struggling with suicidal thoughts. All right. August 15th through 19th, 2019.
I laid in the spots of blood you had spit up during your struggle. I had a hard time eating, sleeping, or even understanding what was going on. I kept hearing the police officer's voice in my head, seeing you everywhere I turned. I was dreaming of you, and it was like I could feel your hand on my back every time it became hard to breathe from the crying. I saw you in open doorways, even in the passenger seat of my car. I moved back to New York, and I saw you everywhere I went. Every place I would go to, I saw a sign that you were there.
If you deal with someone that commits suicide, either in front of you or, you know, it's a close one that commits suicide, get yourself some help as well. Talk to a counselor. I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get over it, because you will never get over it. I mean, losing a loved one, you never get over it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lost my mom back in 2008 and still haven't gotten over that one. You know, so yeah, get yourself help if you ever deal with suicide. October 1st, 2019.
Now, this is almost a year since they first met. I miss you. I think of you constantly. I see you everywhere I look. I'm getting big, and Ryder is always moving around. You were so excited for this part of the pregnancy, but you didn't make it to this part. I carry your ashes with me everywhere I go. I cuddle with them every night.
And then she writes, the stigma of being weak for men to get help needs to be broken. Mental health is so important. That is 100% accurate.
I agree.
I get so sick and tired of, and you and I are both in law enforcement. I get so sick and tired of when a cop deals with something, oh, just get over it. You know, that happened X, Y, Z. Or somebody in the military, somebody tells them to get over it. Who the hell are you to tell somebody that's dealt with something so traumatic to get over something like that? Mm-hmm. Because you watching somebody commit suicide, number one, that's a traumatic, stressful event. Because the person that committed suicide doesn't really know what the person left behind is going to go through. Mm-hmm. They don't know. All right. It's not that they're being selfish. They just can't handle whatever they're dealing with. Okay, so the family has to suffer, all right? So as far as men having mental issues, yeah, I'm with her. This whole stigma of being weak, I'm tired of hearing it. We need to get our male veterans, our female veterans, if you're a cop, if you're in the military, or if you do some kind of strenuous job that will put even our EMS in fire, we need to get our people help.
Not even that, just a normal citizen.
Even a normal citizen.
Anyone.
Anyone. Now, one of the things that we can do to get help for people and bring awareness to this is we have a suicide hotline. You know, it's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. 8255. Guys, you know somebody going through something. Do not do anything. You best do something. They're going to need you. If you're going through it, you can even text a number. It's 838-255, and that's the suicide chat line, which is open 24/7. All right. Or if you know somebody that's going through it, you text the number and try to get them help. All right. We don't want people or families to have to continue to deal with suicidal actions. Okay. Last week we talked about dealing with the actions. We met with Jonathan Lunsford, and he gave his testimony on how one of his youth group members committed suicide at the age of 17. So, I mean, Nicholas was what, 22 when he committed suicide? Mm-hmm. Suicide doesn't have, you know this, doesn't have an age. Mm-mm. You know, when I spoke with Miss Barbara a couple weeks ago, she told me that one of the kids in Colorado was 14 that committed suicide. 14.
Young.
You know, so yeah, we need to bring awareness to this, and I hope that this episode will bring light on what we're trying to do here. We're trying to shed light on suicide, and we're trying to bring hope to the families that have to deal with this aftermath.
Yep, because this journal entry just proves that she's dealing with it after the fact, mm-hmm. and she will continue. She now, not to say, because I pray for her, I pray for her family, that I hope she doesn't go down that same path because of these, you know, being alone now. And now you've seen someone, you know, in the passenger seat of your car or in the doorway around every turn. Yeah, it's a form of, you know, post-traumatic stress. And people lose their mind over that. It's a serious thing. So let's hopefully pray for her that she doesn't go down that same path he did and decide, I can't live like this no more. I have to let it go, which we hope does not. We don't see another long journal entry with her.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, we're giving away free copies of With Her Last Breath, and 26 pages of Kathy's journal article is in that book. And you would think, well, why would you give away a copy of that? It's because I want to bring light to this. You know, this is actually a topic that most people don't want to talk about.
Yeah, in reference to that book, I glanced at it. And I saw a few of the pages that she wrote, I guess, as her farewell letter. And just by the glancing, it's sad that, you know, she goes into detail of how much time she has left before it's over. And she actually counts it down on those pages. And I ain't gonna lie, people, I got a little heartbroken. I got a little teary-eyed because that's just sad. And watching your loved one doing this and you're reading it, knowing that they count down their end of their time, their clock, their expiration date. And again, I glanced at it. I'm dying to read this book. I guess Brandon will tell you how to get a free copy of it, but I'm dying to read this book myself. It seems like one of those things that will either tear jerk you, open your eyes, or I don't know, bring you closer to someone that you might have possible thoughts that they might be thinking of it.
Right. Well, just remember, guys, let's always do something. Don't sit around and just watch this unfold in front of your eyes, because you don't want to be left with, oh, I should have, I could have, or if I would have. No, we need to keep track of what's going on and do something. Mm-hmm. So in order to get a free copy of this book, you can share this episode on your Facebook or any social media platform, or you can also leave us a message about this episode or any previous episode at anchor.fm/elderqueen/message. And I'll have that link in the show notes for you guys. So without further ado, and I'll also post a link to this Facebook post in the show notes as well. So without further ado, Robert, any other closing statements?
No, just remember the 22, and it's not just veterans, it's everyone. There's never not enough help for someone. And never, ever say, I'm sorry, I didn't know. If you think there's signs and symptoms, help them. We gave you all the phone number. Please call it.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this episode, and we look forward to speaking with you guys next week. Y'all have a blessed day.
Greetings. This is Steve Selyards, the author of The GA Junkie, and here are some Presbyterian history notes for the week of September 29th. Sunday, September 29th. In 1802, the Synod of Pittsburgh was organized and held their first meeting. The synod was formed from three presbyteries that came from the Synod of Virginia. This was the first PCUSA Western Synod established on the frontier. Monday, September 30th. John Samuel McIntosh was born on this day in 1839 in Philadelphia. He grew up in Philadelphia, and as a young man, he moved with his family to Ireland. He finished college and ministry training in Ireland and Scotland. He considered a Scottish Free Church pulpit, but chose instead to serve in Ireland. He later accepted a call to Second Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia and remained there the rest of his life. Tuesday, October 1st. On this day in 1529, the Marburg Colloquy began at Marburg Castle in Hesse, Germany. At this four-day meeting, Martin Luther and Ulrich Zwingli tried to unify Protestant theology, particularly concerning the Lord's Supper. While the debate was respectful, no agreement could be reached. Some of those involved saw political advantages to unifying the Lutheran and Reformed branches, including the host, Philip of Hesse. Luther wanted to keep politics out of it, but was eventually persuaded to participate. Zwingli, however, appreciated the political advantages of an agreement. Wednesday, October 2nd. In 1929, the General Assemblies of the Church of Scotland and the United Free Church of Scotland joined together. This partially healed the split from the disruption of 1843, as well as the Relief Church split in 1761, and a piece of the Seceder Church which split in 1732. Thursday, October 3rd. In 2001, a group of three churches in Germany associated with the Presbyterian Church of Ghana met and formed their own district, covering the country of Germany. Other PCG worshiping communities joined them in the next few years, and today the PCG Germany district has 14 worshiping groups that are part of its organization. Friday, October 4th. On this day in 1749, commissions from the Synod of New York and the Synod of Philadelphia held their first meeting to discuss reunion, but without agreement at that meeting. It would take another 8 years to heal the old side, new side split. Saturday, October 5th. Jonathan Edwards was born on this day in 1703. He is one of the great American theological and philosophical minds of the 18th century. Edwards was a pastor in Massachusetts and was known for his revivalist preaching across New England as part of the Great Awakening. After falling out with his congregation, he pastored another church in the region and was a missionary to the Housatonic Band of Indigenous Peoples. He was persuaded to accept the position of the president of the College of New Jersey, but died from smallpox inoculation very shortly after taking up that office. Thank you for joining me here on the EAR podcast, and I look forward to joining you again next week.
You have reached the end of yet another episode from The Ear. We hope that God's word remains on the ears of the listeners. We pray that this podcast would urge you to go forth and spread His good news to the world. Thank you for tuning in. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. See you at the next episode. God bless you, and may His glory shine upon you.